Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our topic tonight is the Blackjack Ball, an event hosted every year for some of the world's best gamblers, hosted by Max Rubin. At the time of this show, Max is off flying somewhere to a secret game. So Richard and I sat down with Max for a short time yesterday. We're going to play a tape of what Max said, and then we'll introduce this year's winner of the Gross Gene Cup and the most recent inductee into the Blackjack Hall of Fame.
Max Rubin, with the help of Brona Casino, you've been hosting the Blackjack Ball for 20 years. I'll bet it delights you that Richard Munchkin and James Grossjean have both been disqualified from playing for being too damn good, and now they help you with the monstrous task of putting on the ball. Is this right?
That's correct. They each supply me with questions, some years more than others, depending on how busy they are, but Munchkin supplied me some really good questions, and it's really difficult coming up with questions that can stump the best players in the world. So I go out, and all throughout the year, I read the daily reports that come out and try to find things that I can trick people with these questions, because it is really difficult to stump these guys in the room. But we did a damn good job this year of keeping everybody off their feet, and took out of 21 questions, the best answers on the test or the best qualifying came in at 10 correct.
Yeah, I think it was a very hard year. People, it was a tough test this year.
Good.
I have to say I don't feel like we really gave you that much help, and I hope I can do better next year, actually, giving you more.
Good. We'll start looking for questions now. I've already got three for the next year based on this year, so that's good.
Well, it's not just the questions. It's all the other stuff that goes involved with, you know, I had a party after the ball, and, you know, as Max can tell you, you know, people just don't RSVP, which is a real problem when you're trying to plan things.
Well, it certainly is, and your after party, people would just come and go, but at the Blackjack Ball, we have a fixed number of seats with full dinner and prime rib and salmon and whatnot, and we only have X number of seats, and I need to know if you're coming or not, and people simply will not RSVP, or they just don't show up after they do. That's like RSVPing for a wedding and not showing up. So I put all those names down, and next year they will not be receiving an invitation. And now if they're listening to your show, they will know why.
Too harsh. Every year there's a contest to find the world's greatest blackjack player. So 21 questions. As you said, this year the best score was 10. And the ones who do the best on that score knock heads in a skills contest. Before the contest begins, however, there's a Calcutta with you as the MC from hell. How does a Calcutta work?
Well, I had put together a variety of teams. This year we had 14 different teams, and I'll batch them up, and let's say the number one seeded team will have three former winners. Next team will be the people in the room that went to MIT, and that'll be the MIT squad. Then we'll have the Hall of Fame team, as such as with Tommy Hyland, for example, and the different members that are there from the Hall of Fame. Then we'll also have the Hall of Fame contenders or nominees for the year. And we break that down just with different groups. The Washington Solos, lots of top players come out of Washington. We have the Geezers, and that's any man They are men, typically. Anybody over 60, no women will admit they're over 60, so only the men raise their hand when we ask who's on the geezer team. And then we have, we call them the gambling girls. No, I am not politically correct, but they like being called girls. And we'll have a ladies team coming out there, and that's the ladies under 60. And then we'll have certain other squads, but basically, it all comes down to one final batch, and that is the field. And the field dominates every year. They will always have at least one person at the table, at the finals table, simply because there's so many of them. And then after they win, they get put into a new category on the Calcutta. But we will start bidding, and as people come to the party, everybody throws in $20 that's going to be taking the test. And I don't make the guess that even though they'll take the test, they have no chance of winning. They don't have to throw in. So we typically get $1,700, $1,800 in what is commonly referred to as dead money or live money. But that gives us an overlay on the entire test so that no matter whom you buy, there's extra money in that pot. So everybody's got an edge to start off, if you will. And then we have an auction, and we auction these teams in the room, and it gets pretty fun. It's exciting. I know the guys, so I harpoon a lot of them, and most of the time they deserve it, sometimes not, but it's all in good, plain fun, and I really enjoy doing that. And to me, that's probably my favorite part of the party, is having the Calcutta auction.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun, and you need a good auctioneer for a Calcutta, and you do a really excellent job at it. So, I think a lot of people enjoy the auction.
Now, there are some well-financed guys who could conceivably come in with $500,000 of cash and start buying up all the teams, bidding more than everybody else does, and basically collect that $1,700 or $1,800 worth of dead money. If that started to happen, what would you do?
Oh, I've got that one figured out. I would hope somebody would do that, because I would see it after the first top two or three, and I'd wait until they spent a fortune on those teams, and then tell them, sir, your game's too good for us, and back them off from making any other bets. Then I would start buying the teams myself, and I would bid $500,000, and say, you must have the cash with you. I will extend credit to myself. So I can buy a team for $1,000,000. I could buy the entire rest of the board. Then I would adjust the questions accordingly to whomever happens to be on a certain team. And because I'm asking the questions, I could do anything I want. And when we got to the finals table, let's see, I could have Bob Dancer sitting next to Bobby the Bullet, who is a beast and looks like Sasquatch, and I'd say, okay, first competition will be arm wrestling. Bob, you go against Bobby. You're out the game. Okay, the next one would be, who's got the longest hair? I'm sorry, Queen of Hearts, you're out. Okay, boom. And I would just keep going through that. Who's got this? We could trade punches to the face, whatever it would be, but I would figure it out on the spot, and I'd win. So they know better than to do that.
I call you an MC from hell. But anyway.
Bill Benner actually suggested one year that he would do that, said he would just bring $1,000,000 to the party, buy everybody in. But Bill's much too classy a guy to pull that kind of move, and he wouldn't do it. But other people that aren't quite so classy have also broached that notion, but I would love it if somebody tried to do that.
Well, you have to realize you're sitting in a room full of advantage players. Everyone there is going to be thinking about how can I get an advantage, right? So,
yep. Yeah. Because it's my party and I make the rules, I'm thinking about how I'm going to get the advantage too. And although when we start the Calcutta, I have already purchased every team for a fixed price, I never buy a team, because I want everybody else to play. And one of the other great things about a Calcutta is after a team is purchased, if you happen to be on that team, you have the rights to own half that team yourself. And that's a really important part. And that's what happens after the Calcutta. Everybody gets together and starts negotiating how much I can buy of myself. So that'll take, 10 or 15 minutes as they buy each other. Then everybody's ready and we head downstairs and have the formal competition on the tables.
Now, you mentioned Bill Benner. He was voted into the Blackjack Hall of Fame in a pretty close contest.
I'll tell you how close it was. He won by 5 votes. Each member of the Hall of Fame gets 3 votes. All it would have taken is one Hall of Fame member not to have voted for Bill and to have voted for Don Johnson, and Don Johnson would now be in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. That's how close it got. So it was neck and neck all the way as we were counting the ballots.
All righty.
So
now the Grossteen Cup, now that's awarded to the winner of the skills contest. This year
yes.
It was won by Lee Jensen, a young man I had never met before, and he didn't even pick out the name Lee Jensen until less than a week ago. So I'm pretty sure he wasn't invited to the ball last year. How did he get his invitation?
He was a last-minute addition. For the first time in history, I had 15 emergency last-minute calls canceling. And as we mentioned earlier, it's very tough deciding who gets to come to the ball, who gets the invitations. And Dr. Ed Thorpe was bringing his family and asked if he could. Well, what are you going to do, tell Dr. Ed Thorpe that invented card counting, no, you can't bring your family? And just as a real quick side note, this is how smart the folks in his family are. His grandchildren, he has three triplets. Of course, there would be three. And all three of these 18-year-old kids are freshmen at MIT. Well, they were coming to the party, and then emergencies happened at the last moment, had to cancel there, and then I had to get on the horn and start trying to find people that were around town. And at the very last minute, we found out that Lee was in town, and Munchkin knew who he was, and he's been a pretty well-rounded player, but just hasn't been part of the club. And he got that last-minute invite, came in and came out of nowhere and surprised everybody as part of the field and took home the title. And the Grossteen Cup this year was an amazing trophy. That was a 15-liter bottle of Luc Belair Rare Rosé that Don Johnson got comped for the party, and Lee took that home with him. And it was a 91-pound trophy that he now has sitting on his mantle at home.
I have to say, it really bums me out that I can't compete anymore, because I would love to have won a trophy, you know, a bottle like that. Not that I would drink it, but just to have it.
Well, we thought about how to bring you and Grossteen back into the fold and maybe, I don't know, handicap you in some fashion where you get dinged for four or five questions before we even start the contest. So that would maybe help people get a leg up, but then I can no longer use you to provide questions. But
it's
pretty tough to stump you two guys. You're both very well read, and when you get to a finals table, you know how to knock people off in a tournament format. So I don't know. It would be nice to have you back at the finals table, but it just got to the point it wasn't fair, because you're just too damn good, Richard.
Well, thank you, Max Rubin. We could easily and enjoyably spend the entire hour talking to you. Well, we're going to cut off this pre-interview, and we're going to talk to Lee Jensen and Bill Benner. Thank you very much.
You bet. Glad to have joined you, and we'll get back together sometime later in the year and talk a little bit more about the blackjack ball, among other things. All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Okay. Bye, Max.
All right. We're back live again. We could have talked to Max forever. He's great. Now, there were six worthy nominees for the Blackjack Hall of Fame. The winner in a close vote, as Max said, was Bill Benter. Bill Benter is reputed to have memorized Ed Thorpe's Beat the Dealer way back when and went on to become a successful blackjack player and team owner. He used computer modeling and eventually applied his methods to horse racing, where he's been enormously successful, rumored to be in the hundreds of millions of dollars. He's also a class act, said to have given tens of millions of dollars for worthy causes all over the world. Bill Benter, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Richard. Glad to be here.
So we've actually been trying to get Bill on the air, on the show, for a long time, and maybe we can get him back talking about things other than just the blackjack ball. But in the meantime, how are the lessons you learned in blackjack applicable to everyday life?
Well, where to begin on that one? There's so many ways that blackjack can teach you things and perfect some of your virtues. I think it's because blackjack is such the edge, when you can achieve it, is so narrow that you have to do just about everything right all of the time in order to realize that edge. And you have to be able to do that for months or even years under very stressful conditions, which, you know, is a great training ground for virtues of discipline and hard work and thrift, keeping records, you know, et cetera. You know, I think also it kind of shows you that knowledge, by that I mean book knowledge, can give you power. You know, that reading these arcane strategy tables developed by computer and by eminent mathematicians and committing that knowledge to memory and using it gives you a certain power in the real world. So it shows that knowledge is power. I think it's a fair game. I mean, it rewards study and practice. The longer you spend on the practice table practicing your counting skills, or the more time you spend memorizing strategy charts, all of that pays off in increased profits in the casino. So it's good in that sense. And it helps you to keep your wits about you in stressful situations. You've got a pit boss glaring at you, and you've got a maximum bet riding, and you know, the cocktail waitress is bothering you, and you're trying to think of an obscure playing situation that has come up, and you're trying to remember what the correct strategy is, as well as trying to keep the count. And all of this while you're trying to look like you're just a gambler having fun, you know, that's good practice.
You know, I thought your speech, I mean, it was short, but I thought you were very eloquent in receiving the Hall of Fame. But you also talked about the importance of teamwork.
I did. You know, I found that, you know, when I started out playing blackjack on my own, it was a very difficult road. I know there are some people who have successfully conducted their entire career almost playing alone, but that's very much the majority. I found that working with others and being able to get along with others to function as part of a team was, you know, a tremendous boon to being able to be successful. That you know, I guess you could see my political leanings here. You know, I'm going to say it takes a village to win at blackjack.
Hillary, I guess.
Yeah, go Hillary. No, I think it does show that working with others, though. I mean, that you know, psychologically, it's rewarding. I mean, it's comforting to have teammates. There's a sharing of knowledge. There's people to correct you when you go astray. And you know, since then, all of my subsequent gambling-related projects have been as teams, and I always extol the virtue of teamwork to others who are attempting to win at gambling games. I say most of these are not really one-man projects.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I've said on the air often that if I had to play alone, I wouldn't do it. And I also think that there is a creative spark that happens when you get people together. They communally will come up with ideas that I don't think you would come up with alone. You know, because you start bouncing things off each other, and that's where great ideas, you know, often come from.
Exactly. I think the most productive and fertile years in blackjack for me were when we were literally all living together in a rented house in Las Vegas, where we'd have four or five people, and we'd spend evenings in the jacuzzi talking blackjack ideas, and we'd wake up talking blackjack, and, you know, you know, camaraderie, the sort of, you know, did elicit the kind of invention and enthusiasm that goes with it. I can see why many successful startup companies had their garage phase when the founders lived together. And yeah, it's a very good model.
Very good. We're now going to talk about the guy who won the Gross Gene Cup. Lee Jensen lives in the northwest part of the United States and regularly gambles in blackjack and other casino games. Lee Jensen, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, as Max indicated, you barely eked out an invitation to this year's ball with some help from a guy who goes by the handle of Lonesome Gambler. Now, at the ball, Lonesome Gambler told me that if you didn't give him a shout-out, he was going to hurt you. So Max told his version of the story. How did it look from your eyes?
Well, basically, I was already planning on being in the area that weekend because I had some plans to meet up with some other AP friends as well as Lonesome Gambler who are also in the area. And he sent me a text and just said, hey, you know, there's a chance maybe you could go to the blackjack ball. Would you be interested? And of course, I said, sure. And, you know, next thing I knew, I had an invite from Max in my email. And then now, thanks to him and whoever else approved it, or I don't know how it went down behind the scenes, but here I am. So,
thanks. I'm willing to bet that you're going to get an invitation a bit earlier next year, unless you do something silly like going to work for a casino or something. Now, relatively few people knew you at the start of the ball, and you were a member of the men's field. That, too, just might change next year. Now, the men's field was purchased for $4,000 by, surprisingly enough, Bill Venter. So, did you buy any piece of yourself, and if so, how much?
No, I did bid on the field because I had never been there before, but it seemed definitely like the best bet. I think I got up to about $1,500 or $2,000, and it just kind of seemed like Bill was going for it. So I backed off, and I knew that I could buy half of it, you know, after the auction ended. But by the time I was able to make it over to the table, it had been done. It was probably done immediately, you know, as the auction ended. But so, no, I didn't get any action on myself, but I know some of my friends did make money and were pretty happy when I won it, other field members, that is. So.
All right.
Yeah, I think we need to sort of clarify the rules about buying back because, you know, you should have been able to buy a piece of that, but whoever ended up with the half, you should have been part of that group, you know what I mean, to be able to buy. I mean, if Bill bought the field, he should be able to keep 50% of it, but the other 50% should be divided among all the people in the field who want a piece of it, you know, not just the first guy who gets there.
Yeah, one guy bought half immediately, and he but he had, you could have gone up to David and asked him, and he would have given you some, sold you some, but I guess it took some while to figure that out. All right, next year you're not going to be part of the field, so won't be a problem. The 21 question test, you got 9 correct, which is one off the top, but and you went into a playoff. At that point. Now, which question on the test did you find most interesting?
Yeah, well, two things. One thing that was interesting was that I only got 9 right, and I thought I had absolutely no chance. And it was actually pretty shocking to be in the finals with 9 out of 21. But the one question I think that was kind of like a ace in my sleeve was a really tricky one. It was about the federal court case filed by Bob N. on behalf of some Advantage players who had some issues in Arizona. And that's a case I paid, you know, pretty close attention to because of the importance to APs who play in tribal casinos. And I know the question was meant to be really tricky, but I was sure I got it right. And it was about the figurine that the casino claimed was a cheating device that one of the players had.
Yeah, that actually was my question. I need all the help I can get, folks.
Yeah.
It was a donkey, but the question was true or false, was there an elephant used? And the answer was false, because this is an election year and you got to know your donkeys from your elephants. All right, now Bill Benter, you also took this test, as did 80 some other folks. We all got somewhere south of 9 questions correct. Did you have a favorite question at the ball?
Yeah, I got 8 questions correct. And was sort of glad I did because I, you know, the skills contest has gotten so difficult that you know, I would be afraid of embarrassing myself in the against some of the likes of the winner and John Chang and the other extremely skillful blackjack players. But I always learn something from those questions.
Yes,
they're very interesting. And the one that struck in my mind was how many 6-5 blackjack games there now are on the strip. It was a question about, I forget the exact phrasing of it, but it was sort of the number of blackjack game live blackjack games on the strip that are now paying off at the lower rate of 6-5 instead of 3-2. And I was just astounded by that number. It's a shame.
I think the question was true or false. There are now more 6-to-5 games than full pay 3-to-2 right. on the Strip,
True by about 2-to-1.
Right. Yeah. Many more 6-to-5 games, and some of them are even money. I mean, there's a game called Superfund 21 where, you know, the blackjack pays even money. So.
All right. Now back to Lee Jensen. Two players got 10 questions correct, Tommy Hyland and John Chang, both of whom have been on this show one time at the same time, both members of the Blackjack Hall of Fame. And now...
Actually, if I can just rag on Tommy a little bit here.
Yeah.
I own Tommy in the Calcutta, so I was very happy that he got to the final table. And
he blew it, folks.
Boy, did he blow it. Yeah. And, you know, as Bill can attest, if his wife had been there instead of him, you know, because he blew it on the memorizing cards. And, you know, his wife was actually quite good at that. But I think he managed to memorize 3.
Yeah, that was kind of embarrassing. When that happened to Andy Block a couple of years ago, Max ripped him a new one, but suggested to Andy to get his money back from MIT for claiming to educate him. But he let Tommy off pretty easy.
Yeah.
All right. Now, there maybe 10 people had 9 correct, and they were going to cut it down to 4 people. So they had a playoff question where each of you in turn had to name a casino in the southern part of the United States from Florida to Louisiana which dealt blackjack. Now, and also it can't have been listed by anybody else. By the time the end, where you went from 5 people to 4, did you still have more casinos in the South up your sleeve, or were you pretty well at the end of your rope, Lee?
I definitely had more. I actually spent a lot of time in the South playing in the casinos there on an RV trip about a year ago. So I think
you could have kept going for a while. So. All right.
Excuse me?
You could have kept going for a while.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the trick was just naming off the beaten path kind of casinos so you didn't accidentally repeat one of the ones you didn't hear. So it was kind of tricky in that sense. If you got on lucky and just named something someone else already named, you would have been out.
You know, when I had to play in those playoff things, I thought that that it was important to try to take the most well-known ones off the table early so that it would make it harder on the other players, and try to keep the obscure ones kind of in my back pocket so that, you know, once it got more difficult, I would have something there. But
good strategy. Definitely.
Now, when it came to the skills contest, you were up against, among others, John Chang and Tommy Hyland. They're, you obviously knew who they were.
Of course.
Were you intimidated at all by them?
Yeah, a little bit. I didn't really know what the contest was going to consist of. I had some ideas just from stuff that I've heard, but I really didn't think I was going to finish in first place at that point, though.
All right. There's 5 tests. Each one eliminating one guy. So the first one, you had to count down a deck to determine which card, whether it was low, 2-to-6, medium, 7-to-9, or high, 10-to-ace. You were the fastest for doing this, which turned out to mean you didn't even matter if you were right or not, because they did it from the other way, and one of the slower ones
got it wrong.
Yeah. But you beat John Chang, and in his prime, John was reputed to be able to count down a deck in less than 10 seconds. Was it a confidence builder that you beat John Chang?
Well, it was, but I didn't know if speed, you know, counting would have came into play later. But once it did, I definitely knew I had a chance because of that.
All right. Second test, card memorization. Max spread out a shuffled deck, and you had to memorize as many cards as you could in about 30 seconds. It only got three cards before Tommy blew out, as Munchkin has already mentioned. How far do you think you could have gone on this card memorization?
I think I could have gone about 15 to 16 cards. I just made it a point to go as far as I could feel comfortable about the accuracy with. So that was a tip I got from a friend. So I believe it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 16 that I'm sure would have been right. And then after that,
yeah, I think
would have been guessing.
Well, I don't think it had a chance to get to 15 or 16. All right, now you're in the money, but still three tests away from winning the whole thing. How's your confidence level now? Do you remember this particular point?
Oh, so I think the next thing was the cutting after that, I believe.
Nope.
And
cutting wasn't next.
Okay.
The third test was estimating the number of cards in a slug that Max put in the discard tray.
Okay, got it.
There were actually 145 cards. You were 10 off of that. You said 155. And John Chang said was also 10 off, but everybody else was quite a bit worse. One guy guessed 168. He's out. Now we're down to three guys. I personally was surprised that none of you guys got closer than that. I would have thought, I don't know that I could have gotten closer, but I...
Yeah, that's surprising to me, too. I would have expected them to be closer than that.
So, but you don't have to be embarrassed about being 10 off, because that was the best. Fourth test was a cutting. Max put a single deck in a discard tray, gave you a cut card, and said within 5 seconds after I give you the cut card, you got to cut exactly 15 cards. Everybody tried it. One of the guys cut 9, which was 6 away. The rest of you were closer than that. You were actually one of the closest to the 15. So now your head's up with John Chang. And it turns out to be almost a duplicate of the first test, where you have to count down a deck and figure out whether the card that was taken out was either low, medium, or high. And except this time it's a double deck. You already knew you could count faster than John Chang. How are you feeling now?
You know, I felt like I had a good shot. I just wasn't sure if I wanted to go for, like, super turbo speed and have a chance at making a mistake or just go, you know, as fast as I could and know that I would be 100% accurate. And I kind of did a mix of both, and I had some time to spare, so I was a little worried about the card for that, like, 5 seconds or so I was waiting. But it turned out that I was right. So that was that.
Now, on this one, I actually think John Chang blew it. He noticed that you beat him on the first one, had to have a good sense that you were going to beat him on this one too. So what he has to do is when it's just take a guess whether it's low or high. They both had 4 chances out of 5 chances out of 13 to collect. And so 5 out of 13 is a whole lot better than no chances out of 13 if he could assume you were going to get it correct. So he didn't do that, but I think that would have been his smarter play.
Yeah, or at least he should have tried to turbo through it, and if he saw that he didn't think he was going to be accurate, then take the shot. I'll bet he's losing sleep over that one, actually.
Well, I talked to him later. He thought about some. You could have named your own count. Everybody picked high-low, but there you could have picked any count. And so John was saying afterwards, maybe I should have picked the red-black count.
Actually, if that's true, you could just pick the 10 count, and then you could just pick low, right? Because you're just counting 10s versus everything else.
Oh, I'd pick the ace count, where aces are minus 12 and everything else is plus 1. And put the deck down, I guess, low. So, somehow I think Max would have put a stop to that.
Well, but the 10 count's a real count, right? I mean...
All right.
See, everybody's always trying to figure the angles, so we'll have to make sure that that doesn't happen next year. Somebody tries to do that.
So you got a 3-foot-tall bottle of champagne.
91-pound bottle.
The bottle didn't weigh that much, but the packing and stuff did. It's like six liters is, what, 15 pounds maybe, 12 pounds, and the bottle itself is pretty heavy. It's champagne, so it had to be, and then the box. But still, you probably didn't carry it on your carry-on luggage.
No.
Is there room in your apartment / house for this, or have you... Are you sleeping with it?
Well, no, I actually had a nice place in my, you know, bookshelf on my mantle there for it, so it actually fits really good. So it's displayed in my great room of my house right now. And one thing I found out the day I was leaving was that you can't ship alcohol. None of the, you know, local couriers will let you do that out of Vegas. There's some weird law or something, because I went to two or three different places, and then I finally realized that I had to check it on the airline as my check bag, and they would only take a bag up to 100 pounds, and at that time I didn't know how much it weighed, so I was a little worried I would get to the airport and get turned back and have to figure something else out, but luckily it was under by 9 pounds, and I was able to check it home.
All right. Now, you also get the Grosjean Cup, which is this big trophy, and you put it right next to the Munchkin Trophy, which is little. So, James did get to 3 wins before Richard did, but...
In many fewer years, too.
But... So.
But I think he studied.
You think he studied, huh? All right. Now, Bill Benter. If you were in the skills contest,
yes.
Which of these do you think you would have gotten right? Which of these do you think you would have gotten wrong? Could you have done that? Could you have done well?
I think I could have done well at the card estimation. My counting down a deck is not as fast as it once was, and I think I could have done well at the cutting competition. So those two. So two out of five.
So if you can't do...
What did you say about the memorization? I'm sure you would have done better than Tommy.
It would. I may be a little rusty. I'd be curious as to whether the winner had used a particular memorization technique, or was it just a kind of just look at him and memorize him, or did you use one of those word association where you associate each card with a picture? That's what I used to use when I did card memorization back in my playing days.
So, yeah. Lee, how'd you do it?
Well, I just used the numbers for the numbers because we didn't need the exact card. So it was just memorizing a number, and then I used the word for the paint cards and aces. So it worked out for me at the moment. But I, like I said, I'm sure there's other people who could have gone way farther than I could have if it came down to it.
I would have tried to memorize them four at a time. So like the king, 5-4 were the first four. And then you get on to the second one, which I still remember were 7-6 something. How would you have done it, Richard? Because you had this test.
I'm like Bill. I use, you know, characters and actions, which is described. There's a really good book about memory called Moonwalking with Einstein, and it is the method that he mentions in the book, where you see people doing different actions and the characters and actions have meanings. So,
All right, we're going to take a break and do a few commercials now, and while I'm doing the commercials, I want both Bill and Lee to talk about some of your favorite parts of the blackjack ball that we haven't talked about yet.
You mean when we come back? We'll
when
talk
we
about
come
that.
Back.
Yeah.
Could I say that backwards?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. The big promotion at the South Point in February is for locals who already get mailers. You pick up your regular mailer Monday through Friday of each week, and if you do, you qualify for an additional pickup on the Friday, Saturday, or the same week. You do that all 8 times, and on the last day, you get a big pickup. So the top mailer is $75 a week. So normally, instead of getting $300 in the mailer this week, it is 1350, which is quite a big difference. Double point. Next Monday, my birthday, is although they call it President's Day, it's February 15. Free video poker class this week will be bonus poker quick quads. This is noon Wednesday in the Grandview Lounge. Although it was originally scheduled to be double bonus quick quads, the casino informed me a few days ago that the double bonus quick quad pay schedule will be downgraded, and it has been. So we talked him into keeping bonus poker quick quads. So it's 99.55%. And everybody at least 21 years old is invited. At the Palms, their drawings, they're having the same drawing format until the end of April. Every Friday and Saturday night, 7:15, you have a chance to win $1 million. So technically, you could win $1 million every one of those days. There's going to be five winners each of those nights. They keep drawing until they get five people who were there. The $1 million match game is they put up 20 envelopes on a board. You pick five of them. Inside five out of the 20 envelopes, it says Palms. Those are good. Inside the other 15, it says something like Sorry, Charlie. So if you each one of the Palms ones you get an extra $100 in free play. If you get five Palms, you get $1 million. I calculated the odds at basically 15,000 to one against you. So that drawing is worth $65 EV, but of course there's big dreams coming along with it as to how you would spend your $1 million. PFP, play for prizes. Until the end of this week, it's Monday through Friday, you earn Macy's gift cards. February 15th to 26th, you earn Lowe's gift cards. Cards are redeemed at a rate of 0.2%, up to $190 per day. You keep your points. Throughout February, the Palms is having a Match Your Status promotion. If you have premium status at any other casino, such as Diamonds or Seven Stars at a Total Rewards property, the Palms will match it. If you get graded to MVP status, which is the Palms' second level, you'll also get a $20 free play. If you get upgraded to Hall of Famer status, their top one, you'll get $40 in free play. One advantage of the higher status is the price you pay for the buffets. Hall of Famers get 75% off the buffets for up to two people. MVPers get 50% off. And they both get to stand in a much shorter line. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. They have contests every week. The game of the week this time is 10 Play Ultimate X. This is a 10 coin per line game where you get paid 5 coins times the multiplier. The multiplier ranges between 1x, which means no multiplier at all, and 12x. You earn multipliers each time. You get at least your money back. The correct strategy is based both on what you can earn this hand and also what multiplier you're building for the next hand. I'll be teaching the double bonus version of this game February 17th, 8 days from when we're first airing the show. You might want to check it out on videopoker.com to get a feel for how the multipliers work. Next week, we have two guests. Jeffrey Compton, publisher of CDC Gaming Reports, will talk about interesting casino news in the last month or so. We're also going to have Daryl McEwen, who writes a newsletter called Seven Stars Insider. This talks about all things related to the total reward system. Daryl is not an advantage player. He is a slot player, but he gathers all this information. The advantage to us to talking to the slot player is when he has questions, he'll take them to Total Rewards, and they'll answer him because he's just a slot player. Whereas if I ask them the same question, they say, well, why do you want to know? And they would be suspicious about it. So there's a whole lot of changes in Total Rewards this year compared to last year, so we'll be talking to Daryl about that next week. All right. This is the Blackjack Hall of Fame show. We're talking to Bill Benter, newest inductee into the Blackjack Hall of Fame, and Lee Jensen, the winner of the Gross Gene Cup. All right. So, Bill, what part of the ball haven't we talked about that you think is pretty cool and is worthy of a shout-out?
Well, I think the sense of community that the Blackjack Ball and the Hall of Fame have created amongst Advantage players and specifically Blackjack players is just tremendous. It's such a great thing it's done for the community. It's made us feel we all belong to a kind of a real profession and a sort of fraternity. So for me, it's the the warm feelings of seeing familiar faces and it's just a great evening. One of my most look forward to evenings of the year, I would say.
You know, I have to agree with you just 100%.
Me too.
And I also feel like that once a year is not enough. I'm actually going to organize something 6 months later. It'll be hotter than hell in Las Vegas. But, because as I say, I agree. And it affords us the opportunity. I never thought that I would get to meet Ed Thorpe.
Or
the guy, the four horsemen, the guys who actually calculated basic strategy before Thorpe, wrote his book. I mean, so, that's just been a tremendous thing for me, another thing I appreciate. But I agree, Bill, we get to see, there are people I get to see once a year and that's it. Because, that's as often as they get to town or whatever. So, it's a great thing.
All right. Lee Jensen. Yeah. This was your first ball. Next year, I promise you will recognize more people than you did this year. What was your most interesting part of the ball that we haven't talked about yet?
Well, it's along the same lines. It just got to put a lot of faces with names. Some of the people there I've been talking to via email or, online message board for years, actually. And it was nice to finally meet them. Also, funny story, I saw a guy that I thought I recognized from somewhere at another table, and it turns out we'd bumped into each other in a casino a couple times, kind of like having a friendly battle to get a certain seat, and it was nice to actually just get a laugh about it with them. So just like you guys said, the camaraderie, and it just makes it a lot easier to work in such a high stress and different type of profession that most people don't understand, and you are able to hang out with people who know exactly what you do and what you have to go through.
Yeah, I'd like to start expanding it to more than just blackjack. To get some of the big sports bettors and some of the other, just make it more about professional gambling in general than blackjack in specifics,
We already have. Now, I'm very grateful that I get an invitation. I think it's partly your fault, Richard, for being my co-host. But actually, Richard, now you're not competing in the 21 questions. So it's got to be a whole different level of stress and stuff when you're at the show. Do you enjoy it more when you're competing or more when you're not competing?
No, I enjoy it more now because, as I was saying, I get to see people, many people I get to see once a year, and now I don't have to worry about competing. I can spend the time talking to the people that I'm there to see, And also, I have to say, the competition has been whittled down. It used to take forever. It was much, much longer in the past. So
The final skills test used to take a half hour, and this time it took about 10 minutes.
Yeah, and I mean, there were years when it probably took a full hour. That definitely has made it better. But no, I actually kind of like not having to deal with competing because it gives me more time to go talk to people while the competition is going on.
Yeah, Max used to have this bigger house than he has now, and so there would be a golf putting contest in the backyard. I'm not sure why that proved what a good blackjack player you were.
Well, there was crazy stuff, too, throwing cards in a hat across the room and, you know, all kinds of weird, you know.
Well, Diamond Mike put a kibosh on that. He,
Not more than just Diamond Mike. Everybody has tried to find an angle at throwing the cards. I mean, you know, the first year that I did it, I crumpled a card up and threw it, you know, like a ball. And, of course, that was disallowed. And then, you know, people would throw the entire deck, and that was disallowed. So, yeah, there have been a lot of people who have taken shots at that particular competition.
There used to be an arm wrestling competition, except Anthony, I think, was
permanently injured. Yeah.
And, I mean, Anthony used to be a wrestler, a good one.
Yeah.
And there's no quit in him. And he's went after a guy named Mr. Yuck, who outweighed him and had some more muscles than it looked like he had. And Anthony got painfully crushed.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, Richard, we got about 30 seconds.
All right. We welcome your questions. You can send them to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or at facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge, or you can tweet them at me at RWM21. If you want the show delivered to you automatically every week, you can sign up to do that at iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or my site, richardmunchkin.com. And you can find an archive of every episode ever done at bobdancer.com.
All right. So we've been trying to get Bill Benner on this show for a long, long time. Finally, he couldn't find a good excuse to say no for that. So next year you're going to have to win the skills contest so you won't have an excuse to say no again. Or maybe come back anyway. Lee Jensen, I wish you much success in future balls. Go out and hit royal flushes, everybody. Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.